You're listening to the Mythgreen Podcast with your hosts, Oren Ashkenazi, Mike Hernandez, and Chris Winkle.
There was a castle by a waterfall with a pink and purple wall and a princess living there. She had no parents and was all alone. She got by on her own and she liked it pretty well. 'Cause she never wore socks. She had a pet snake. She bought a red guitar and she ate a whole cake. And there wasn't anybody there to tell her what to do. So she did what she wanted to. Everybody knew the story of the princess.
This episode is brought to you by our patrons, Ari Ashkenazi and Professor of Political Theory in Star Trek, Kathy Ferguson.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Mythgreens Podcast. I'm Oren. With me today is
Chris.
And joining us again is our special guest, Kristen.
Hello!
Hi, so this is an episode where we are talking about how to get into character in role-playing games. And Kristen, since you are a special guest, I thought first you should tell the audience a little bit about what kind of games that you've played.
Yeah, so I've done a couple different types. I've done L5R. I'm actually in a Torchbearer game right now. I've actually played quite a bit of Torchbearer. It's probably the one I've played the most of. And then I've played various other systems, usually just kind of one shots. I've played social games, so the kind of the social role playing games, and I do a lot of tabletop games as well. So yeah.
Excellent. So this is we're specifically talking about how to get into character when you're playing, and maybe at some point also like if you're the GM trying to get into character for an NPC, which is a slightly different job. My first tip that I like to give people is to not write super long backstories for their character. I know that that's a popular thing that some people like to do, and they think that it like makes your character more like deep and like three-dimensional, but in my experience what it actually does is create a bunch of context that nobody else knows for your character. And so like you write these like pages of backstory about how your character is the way that they are because they have this arch nemesis who's this pirate on the other side of the world, and like the GM might not have time to bring in that pirate, and then, you know, no one else knows why your character has such a deep hatred of pirates.
Are you sure this isn't just because you don't want your players to send you pages of backstory that you become obligated to read and memorize?
Well, that is part of it. I mean, like, I've been on the other side of this too, right? Like, I have written very long and involved backstories for my characters, and then I send them to the GM, and, like, the GM doesn't have time to bring them in, and then I feel disappointed because I spent all this time coming up with this backstory, and, like, it doesn't fit with what the GM had planned, and I think you're just setting yourself up for disappointment by doing that.
Well, like, so the way I approach it is that I'm very general with my backstory, and then I have a couple specifics that is kind of, you know, it's like very specific things of maybe how I met somebody or something like that, and then everything else is I can incorporate or create on the spot then if it makes sense for the story as we're playing.
Yeah, I've done backstories before, but I don't usually do backstories or need them. But like, I could understand why, you know, everybody's different with this kind of thing. How if somebody like wrote a 2-page backstory and they had weird quirks that nobody understood, like they hated pirates and nobody knew why. But if that's the thing that gets them to feel like they identify with their character and otherwise they wouldn't, like, that might not be a horrible trade-off. If there's other ways, that might be better. But to my mind, because backstory is, again, I don't think it's essential for characters in any medium, but people like it for a reason. I think it helps people.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of like basing your character around what happens at the table. And so as a result, like having an idea of where your character comes from isn't bad, but in general, I think you want it to be not super detailed. Like you want it to be something you can sum up in like a sentence. In my experience, that's usually the best way to do it. And from the GM side, I like to try to give my players an idea of what elements of their backstory I need from them, and that way they can know what they're doing. But like, if you're the player, you can't control what the GM's going to do, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like, that might be better for the GM to do it that way, but a lot of GMs aren't going to do it that way. So I'm looking at this from the perspective of if you're the player, how can you get more into character?
Yeah, I think having for character creation in general, and also like role playing a character, what actually comes up in the game is really important, and that's really hard to judge. Like, even if you think you know what your GM is doing, it can still be hard to judge what characteristics will actually come up in the game that you can play off of, and which will just be in the background. And obviously, making up your character and building your character as you go can make sure that your character fits the game. At the same time, while the game is running, there's a lot of pressure, and not everybody can, like, come up with things under that pressure. You know, sometimes people have to need that space to, like, think through things for their character in a space where they have plenty of time and they're not under pressure before jumping in the game, and then actually have something that they can actually play off of when the time comes without thinking too hard about it.
Like, I definitely focus more on my appearance and personality in terms of, like, I get to know those because those are the playable aspects of the character. Whereas the backstory, you know, how you got that personality and how you got that appearance, yes, those could be important, but at the moment when you're doing character creation, you definitely want to focus on what is your character now, and how is that going to affect what they do?
Yeah, a strategy that I use, and, you know, your mileage may vary on this, but what I like to do when I'm making a character is I try to focus on two motivations that my character has, and I try to keep them general so that they can be so that I can adapt them to whatever the GM decides the plot is about or whatever the GM throws at us. And if possible, I try to make them somewhat contradictory, because that gives you a little bit more room to play with, a little bit more depth. So one example that I had is in a game of Mage, I was playing a character named Gaius, who he actually did have kind of a complicated backstory, but it didn't really matter for the purposes of the game. And like his two motivations were that on the one hand he was a physician, and he, like, you know, treated people's wounds and tried to heal them because he had, like, all this life magic. But he also was, like, super pining for the days when there was, like, an authoritarian mageocracy that ruled over the Muggles. And so, you know, those were, like, two fairly general motivations that I knew I could fit into whatever the GM threw at us, and were also somewhat contradictory, that would give me some tension to play with. And as far as, like, my characters go, I don't have a whole lot of them because I'm mostly the GM. But, you know, I think Gaius was one of my more successful ones.
I mean, I definitely have an approach of oftentimes I slowly get a feel for my character as I create them in the character mechanics and play the game. But I'm a very, like, I put myself emotionally on the same page as my character. You know, like, right now I'm in an Avatar game where I'm playing a dragon. The dragon does not like the air nomads. I genuinely do not like the air nomads.
Oh, no. great sadness.
Yeah, if I have a character that is bitter because she's a bastard and has been denied her rightful place, like, I'm bitter with her. And that's kind of my approach. But, like, I don't think that's easy for everyone to accomplish. And sometimes when people accomplish it, they need tools like backstory in order to do it.
The game I'm in right now, I'm a halfling, but I'm very selfish, which is interesting to play for me because it's not normally my personality and it's not normally something that I gravitate towards. And so it's interesting for me having to, like, at the beginning of the game, I literally have to, like, stare at my character sheet and be like, okay, that's right. Anything that comes up, I need to make sure that I am, like in that sort of, like, how can it benefit me mindset. So I kind of have to, like, talk myself into it in the beginning of each game. And I did it, and I picked to do that because I wanted to sort of expand myself as a player, because it's not something that I normally play.
Yeah, that's interesting. I know one thing that I feel like might trip people up is, like, the standard way of creating characters to pick basic character personality characteristics. You know, like, my character is shy or my character is blunt. But I feel like those kinds of things require thinking in the moment. Like, once you start playing the game, it's up to you to figure out how does shy apply to this situation? When I kind of wonder if it might just be easier to be like, hey, so my character is, you know, a radical egalitarian. So I'm going to be rude to anyone in a position of power or authority that we come upon, right? Because that's, like, a very specific instructions that give you an idea for what you should do at any given moment. So that takes some of the in the moment Burdenoff. If you think about your personality as specific behaviors instead of thinking about your personality as sort of like very abstract characteristics.
Right. And that's why I tend to focus more on motivations than specific traits, just because it's easy for like traits to get lost at the table. Just because, you know, our role-playing tables, like, everyone is kind of thinking about what they're doing, and they might not be paying close attention to what you're doing. And so if you have a character who is, you know, who is has traits like shy or bold or whatever, if they're not, like, really front and center with them, other people just might not notice, and you might, you know, the game might just go on with, and you are, like, putting in some effort, but it's not really helping.
Which then can be as not as fun for you to play.
Right. And like, because it's not like a written work where, as the author, you can control where the point of view is and, like, what the audience is seeing. It doesn't really work that way in a role-playing game, whereas it's easier to make specific motivations, like, matter at the table because they, like, are actions that you take as opposed to a way in which you act.
I also find that the characters that often stand out the most are the ones that are willing to fail or look bad or create conflict through their personality. And again, not everybody wants to do this. If you find it unpleasant to use your personality trait to make your character bad at something, like, I think that's reasonable. But that's why a lot of systems have the torchbearer, and I think Mouse Guard 2 has this sort of, you can use a trait against yourself. You can actually, like, mechanically take a personality trait you've established and use it to make yourself worse and take a die penalty for a benefit later. And I think that if you are able to go there, if you're willing to stretch yourself, that really does tend to make for some very memorable role-playing. That makes things, that's when people will actually take notice, you know, of those types of characteristics, whereas they wouldn't necessarily otherwise.
Yeah, and I really like the Torchbearer trait system of, like, having these traits that you can play against and, like, use to mechanically give yourself penalties for, like, a later bonus. It is really hard to get people to use them, though. Like, a lot of players just don't, either doesn't occur to them, or it, like, actively rubs against the way they usually play.
I have to say, I never want to do that. I never want to give myself a die penalty. I feel like it's easier for me to roleplay my character as doing something not great than it is to take, you know what I mean? Than it is to take a mechanical penalty, you know, to give myself a mechanical penalty. Like, if I have a character that's just not socially very smart, like, I can roleplay that character just blatantly giving away information that I, as a player, know that should not be told to somebody else. But that's just in the roleplay, that's in the flavor, right? But I still think that stands out, even if you don't take that mechanical penalty. Whereas I find that I just never want to give myself a mechanical penalty.
See, it's interesting to me that you say that, Chris, because you talk about how you're more comfortable, like, making suboptimal choices with role-playing as opposed to mechanics. So for me, it's almost the opposite. Like, I feel like it feels weird to me to make, like, a role-playing choice that isn't, like, perfectly logical, unless I have, like, some mechanic, like, telling me it's okay, being like, no, Arne, it's fine. You have this trait that says your character is aggressive. You can be aggressive in the situation, even though it's not the rational thing to do. You know, that helps me, for whatever reason. And there are, like, other systems that do similar stuff, like Legend of the Five Rings has a bunch of disadvantages that you can take that give you points and give your character, like, traits that are fun to play. You know, like, playing a character without disadvantages in Elfheimer is just kind of boring. It's like, you know, you're like, yeah, my character is super bland.
That's true. Because a lot of the disadvantage traits are what gives you the flavor that it makes it easier to actually play.
Not to mention plot hooks, right?
Which is one of the things that's always funny, that's a downside to L5R, right? Is it's like, okay, so I'm looking at disadvantages. I could take a disadvantage that is like, I have a permanent injury and that makes my character, like, less capable in combat. Or I could get more points to take a dark secret, that my character has some kind of dark secret that is not only has no actual penalty associated with it, but guarantees I will be the star of at least one session when that dark secret comes up. It's like, why would I not do that?
I think that leads back into what you were saying about motivation and just having personal goals. Like, I feel like goals are a really important part of getting into character, because they give you a reason to be proactive as opposed to just sort of hanging out in the background watching things happen.
And systems like Burning Wheel and Torchbearer, They actually have that, like, codified. You actually write down what your character's beliefs are, and if you have a specific goal, you can write that down. And that's useful to the GM, because that means that you can, like, that the GM can, like, try to build adventures around what they know you want. And it's useful to you as a player, because you've got that reminder there, right? And it's like, you get, like, mechanically rewarded for playing it and such.
Yeah, although I feel like the goal is helpful if it's a good match. And I sometimes have problems with, like, this goal just was not useful. I did not feel like I could play it during the game, and having to revisit them and erase them and rewrite them. And the other thing that sometimes bugs me about that system is that sometimes I made a goal, but the goal didn't really come up or didn't feel like I fit into the session. And then under the rules, I'm kind of mechanically penalized for that. And sometimes that means that, like, I already didn't get to play out the character the way I would have liked, and now it's, you know, adding insult to injury. Not that bad, but, like, I think that sometimes some of these things are very nebulous, and trying to codify them can lead to a little bit too much rigidity.
Yeah, that can certainly happen. With L5R, you can have the problem of, like, you can be pressured to take more disadvantages than you're actually interested in playing, because it's like, you need those extra points to, like, you know, build the proper character, and it's like, well, I'm not really interested in playing a character who is brash, but, like, I took that because it looked like an easy, like, a way to get points without suffering too bad a penalty. But now I've got this thing on my character sheet that says I'm brash, and I just kind of hope the GM doesn't remember it, because then that would, like, throw me out of character, right? So there's advantages and disadvantages to different systems. One that I think is particularly kind of unhelpful is things like World of Darkness, or Chronicles of Darkness, as they're calling it now, I think. Where your character has, like, you have, like, two role-playing traits, and they are, like, your virtue and your vice, and they are, like, the seven heavenly virtues and the seven deadly sins. And they're, like, really hard to play. especially when it's, like, really hard to tell the difference between a character who has fortitude and a character who has hope. They come across exactly the same.
I remember that being really hard to implement as a playable thing. It was just like, oh yeah, I have this. Okay, so that means in this situation, I would probably do this. But then that is at war with my, seven deadly sins one, where, you know, it's this, you know, and stuff. It was hard to kind of figure out how to implement those.
Right. Or like prudence. You can take the prudence virtue, and it's like, that means I basically shouldn't do things a PC does.
Yeah. Like, why am I here? Why didn't I stay at home? That would have been prudent of me to stay at home.
None of this feels very prudent.
I, as the prudent character, vote we all turn around and leave.
So, you know, you different systems will have different, like, mechanical levels of viability. One thing that I want to talk about a little bit is the tension between staying in character and doing what is good for the game. Because that's always tricky, and, like, I don't know if there's a hard and fast rule to address this, but, you know, you can get into a situation where it's like, you're really into this character, and this character is all about, like, political maneuvering, and has, like, these very distinct goals about where she wants the city to go, and all of that, and then this next session, the GM is like, oh, hey, so this session I've got this content prepared where you guys are going to go out and investigate this plague, and you're like, that really doesn't sound like my character. It's really hard for me to imagine how to play my character going to do that. But that's, yeah. But, like, you don't want to be a jerk and hold the game up, right? So, I don't know what the solution to that is.
I mean, I've had some of the same problem with my sort of method role-playing. It's like I get really into my character, and then it's hard to, like, if you get really emotionally invested in your character and feel what your character feels, it's really hard to rein back when you need to. And sometimes you get into a fight with another PC over a thrown shoe, and the GM has to stop the recording and tell you guys that you got to knock it off and that you have to reconcile by the end of the episode.
Are you speaking from personal experience there?
This is like a really deep cut reference for people who have been listening to our actual play podcast of the Last Ship of the Republic.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we did an experiment with an actual play where we actually recorded a 10-session role-playing game. And there was one episode in which myself and Mike, our characters clashed heads quite a bit. And we are both really into character, and we had a really big problem like resolving the disagreement as the episode arc required. And Oren just yelled at us, and we got about.
I would like to think that I spoke with calm authority, but
was not actually yelling. But you know, yeah. So that sometimes happens, and I did also. I mean, I think communicating with the GM where you can. I mean, I had a situation where there was one thing recently where there's one thing that seemed natural for my character, but I was really worried it would mess with the GM's plans. Because my character was just going to go in and, like, take an important antagonist captive in a very abrupt way that maybe the GM wasn't expecting. So in that case, I sort of contacted the GM and was like, hey, like, this feels like the only natural thing for my character to do, but I'm worried it will disrupt your plans. In that case, the GM, you know, said, hey, that's fine, go ahead. But, you know, I would hope that in the situation where that was not fine, that maybe the GM could have arranged something so that my character could still act in character, but then something surprising would happen that I would end up, you know, capturing the antagonist, for instance.
Right. Like, I know that as my own position as a GM, when players, like, contact me and are like, hey, I have this issue where I'm afraid that my character trait isn't going to fit with the plot, I really like it when they do that. Because, like, A, that gives me insight into what they want to do, and then I can try to tailor the story around them. And, I mean, you know, there can be... sometimes you hit a point where like one party just has to give, but I found that in most cases you can find a solution that is mutually beneficial. Now, of course, as a player, you can't make your GM good, right?
Like, yes, I can, Oren. Like,
so like it's possible, like you can do everything right, and it's possible that your GM may just not get it. Right, so you know, at a certain point, you just have to accept that. And like in general, I would prioritize the health of the game over the consistency of my own character. Like that feels bad in the moment, but it can be worth it to, you know, be like, well, I'm not the guy who brought the whole game to a screeching halt, right?
Yeah.
Like even though it required me to make a sacrifice and play my character in a way that doesn't super make sense for how I've established them. And I'm definitely not being self-interested here,
no,
as the GM.
No, not at all.
No, sir.
That's hard because I can imagine in some situations in the perfect storm that pretty much is taking away enjoyment, any enjoyment in play. And like you have not just your own enjoyment to think about, right? You have everybody else. At the same time, if you can't enjoy that campaign anymore because you seriously compromised the character that you were really into, that does become a problem.
That's very true.
I feel like at that point, sometimes you would almost have to just remake your character. Or, I suppose, asking to play a different character as a last resort.
Hey guys, I don't like the way my character is gone. Can I just make a new one?
Just like, my character's gonna stay behind while you do this plague side quest, and I'm gonna play another character that's really into this while we're doing the plague side quest and come back. I mean, for me, there's some situations in which that would feel better to me and be more enjoyable to me than trying to compromise my character.
Sense. Yeah, I think that's a pretty reasonable solution actually. Mm-hmm. It can be it works especially better in longer games where you know you're gonna have time. It's like, hey, I can just bring in a new character and I'll have time to, you know, to establish them in the world. It becomes a little bit less workable if you're in a shorter game where you have fewer sessions, right? It's like, we only have 6 sessions in this game. I can't really afford to lose one with my main character.
That's true. And that's then we're talking with the GM and saying, hey, I'm really, you know, not liking where this storyline is forcing my character to go. And, you know, is there a way that we can work around this? I think becomes more important just for the player's peace of mind, as well as for the GM to know that the storyline, at least one of his players is not enjoying the gameplay.
Can we talk about relationship mechanics a little bit? Because I think inter-character relationships is a huge part of making role-playing, yes, work and for people, and makes a huge difference to the game. And I mean, obviously it does not all have to be in the mechanics. There are some games that have very good mechanics, but regardless, I can't count the number of games where the interactions between 2 PCs was just good enough to entertain the entire table. You know? And it was just because it was that good. And obviously having, you know, a good camaraderie with the other players makes a difference. But there are definitely ways to, like, foster that a little bit.
Yeah, I've what I sometimes do is I create, like, as the GM, I create like a chart of like different characters' relationships to each other, and then like have the PCs put themselves on there and then like draw lines. And that's been fun. I've done that in the past. It doesn't work for all games, especially games that like that are going to be like Avatar, where you're going to meet a bunch of new characters as you go rather than starting off knowing them. But that can be useful.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting for me as a player coming off of playing with you, Oren, as a GM, and then playing within the same system with a different GM. It's really interesting because, so like, in your game, all the characters had relationships between each other, or you had relationships with at least one other character. And in the game that I'm in, granted, we're only a three-person group, and then the GM, so four total, but there's no relationship between each of the characters that's been established ahead of time, other than the fact that we are all in a group adventuring together. So that's an interesting mechanic, because relationships stuff come up throughout gameplay that you kind of have to decide on the spot how you know these people, or how you would react to this person in this situation and things like that.
Yeah, I am a big fan of, during character creation, like talking to another player and deciding like, hey, our character should have a dynamic. And that's not always easy. Like, that requires a fair amount of trust.
Especially if you're doing any kind of like romance in your dynamic. That requires a lot of...
Yeah. And, like, you have to, like, trust that the other player is going to do this in good faith and not just, you know, make you look bad or whatever. But if you can do that, I mean, like, Chris and I have two characters now that, at least, I can't speak for Chris, but I'm really enjoying their dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, we decided that on that before the game started, that Chris's character is kind of romantically interested in mine, whereas my character, sees Chris's character as like a very valuable friend and like, you know, and like bodyguard, but isn't really aware that there's any romance going on.
Which makes for an interesting play dynamic.
Yeah.
And that's been really fun. But like, that's not something you can do with everyone.
I do think, but yeah, I just talking to somebody, can be helpful, but I think some games are much better than others at creating those dynamics. And it's funny, but I think the best relationship mechanics that I've seen in a system is actually in Dungeon World, which is really funny because Dungeon World really doesn't has bad character creation altogether. It's not a very good game, but the relationship mechanics are really good. And I think that what makes them good is that it's specific enough to provide structure and ideas, but being flexible enough that the players can apply them how that they need to. And I think how it works is that you have a series of lines that they give you to start with, and one is like, I disapprove of this character, or I'm keeping a secret from this character, but they're very specific like that. But you get to choose which character you apply them to and which ones you want to use, and I'm trying to think if there's other information that like fill in the blanks that you fill in with them, but it allows you to come up with a very sort of specific, memorable, and creative relationship, and then but choose like, you know, which ones you want to use and which other PCs that they're going to use for. And when we did this in a one-shot, we thought it was very effective and very quickly developing interesting interactions between the PCs.
Yeah, no, those relationship mechanics are definitely the best part of Dungeon World. Like, they got that super right. And I don't know how much of that came from the Apocalypse World and how much they came up with themselves. Other systems, like there's Blue Rose has a mechanic for that, where it's like you can have relationships with other players, but it doesn't have the same like story seed idea that Dungeon World does. I actually think Dungeon World is pretty unique in that way, at least among the systems that I've played.
Yeah, I think the other thing that's good about the Dungeon World way is it doesn't tell you how to roleplay it. Like, I think some relationship mechanics where there's like, for instance, with Blue Rose and with is it Delta Green, that they have like bonds?
Yeah.
And the thing about a bond is it's very vague, so it doesn't actually spark that much ideas about how you're supposed to interact with this other PC, but it almost is constraining in that it tells you that you need to be like closer to them. And especially with Legend of the Elements, where you have this like respect system where like you specifically tell some PCs, they need to respect other PCs, you know? And I feel like that,
yeah,
it doesn't offer ideas or structure enough to be helpful and spark the dynamics, but it is restrictive. And I feel like Dungeon World is the opposite of that, where it tells you that, you know, you might be keeping, like, as an example, you might be keeping a secret from this one other character, but it doesn't tell you how to roleplay that. But it's evocative enough that you will have your own ideas for how to roleplay that, and, but you don't, you're not restricted in how you do it. And I feel like that's what, that really makes it work. Because people need to kind of develop their own natural chemistry.
Yeah, and it would depend on the group that you are playing with as to how that would come across. Because I remember in playing with the blue rose system, even with those bond constraints of just like, you know, you respect this person, you have a, you know, quarrel with this person, it came out really well in gameplay. And that just that definitely could have just been the people that were there.
Well, and like, I don't want to take too much credit for that, but most of that didn't come from the system.
Oh, okay.
Like I did a lot of creating backstories for you and relationships between your characters. Like, they had mechanical impact because of the system, but the system is much vaguer in, like, you know, you have a relationship with this person, and, like, it basically tells you to decide what that relationship is, right? And gives you some ideas, but nothing, like, specific the way Dungeon World does. So, like, you know, I mean, it worked out, and our one-shot was super fun, but it did require me as the GM to do a lot of, like, figuring out, okay, so your character has a rivalry with that character, and, like, feels protective of this character, and there wasn't a lot of support from the system.
All right. And that's obviously something that I didn't know, having being a one-shot and not actually doing character creation, yeah.
Right. One thing that I think does help if you're trying to establish a dynamic with another player, and I have a real problem with this, is, like, wait until you're all in the room to make characters. And I'm so bad at this. I, like, whenever anyone's like, we're gonna run a game, or I want you to be in it, I'm like, yes, we'll save versus making my character right now. Bam. Go and, like, boot. I need my fix of, like, character creation, and I can't wait. So don't follow my example. It's so much easier to figure out a dynamic with the other players when you're actually making your character alongside them, because you don't show up with a preconceived notion.
Yeah. For a lot of games, I mean, speaking of, like, you know, getting into character, like, I think for a lot of games, the mechanics just make it way easier if you just look, create mechanics, and then get inspired, as opposed to coming with a preconceived notion of your character. At the same time, I'm sure for many people, it's easier to roleplay if you just think of your character first, right? Because that's who you're excited about. I don't know, Kristen, do you think of your character as you do the mechanics, or do you think of them ahead
of time?
I think
of them as I do the mechanics, which I totally agree with Oren. Doing it all together makes it way better. Just because, like, in terms of character creation, because that's actually what happened with my current game, is that I was not available the day that everyone else was making character creation. So I actually made mine first, with the GM. And so going in there with a pre-made character and meeting the other characters for the first time, it was kind of like, oh, hey! Like, one thing that happened, because that not everyone was at the same character creation night, was that none of us took any sort of healing ability.
In Torchbearer.
So that's yeah, been interesting. That's been an interesting play dynamic, just in terms of, like, oh, hey, yeah, this happened, and none of us have healing. Beginner's luck!
It's probably fine. What's exactly the worst that could happen?
I think next session we're going into our first cave, and that should be fun. So we get to experience the grind. Yeah. With no healing. And Oren is over there cackling evilly.
It'll be great. Don't worry about it. You're fine. All right. Well, so we are nearly out of time. I did want to put in one little extra bit for GMs who are trying to get into character with NPCs, because, of course, in some ways it's easier because there's less pressure on you to make the character, like, super detailed because it's just an NPC. But on the other hand, you have to do a whole lot of them, right? So my advice is, have just one motivation for the NPC. It doesn't have to be complicated, just one. And just play that up. And if the NPC becomes really important to the campaign, then you can maybe add a little bit more to make them a little more three-dimensional. But like, don't worry off the top of your head of making the character like super deep, because if it's a one-off NPC, the players are not going to notice anyway, and you will have wasted a lot of your time. So like, in an Avatar game that I played a while back, I had an NPC who was the ex-fiance of one of the PCs, and so her starting motivation at the beginning of the game was just to prove that she was better than the PC that had stood her up. And that was her motivation. But she became much more important to the game. So after, like, probably 8 or 9 sessions where she'd played important roles, I, like, kind of expanded her and had her, like, incorporate a motivation of wanting revenge against the Fire Nation. And, like, then having this problem where she was, because she wasn't a bender, she was afraid that she was, like, slowing down as she got older, where, like, her bender friends were just getting stronger. And, like, that was only something that I did because that NPC was really important to the game. I wouldn't do that with an NPC who'd only been around for two or three sessions, right?
That makes sense.
So that's my final piece of advice. Either of you guys want to throw in a final piece of advice since I, you know, hogged up all my time?
I always suggest model things after you can imagine, after things that you can imagine doing. If you can't imagine doing it, you're not going to be able to roleplay it well.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, there's a fine balance, but I think that not being too afraid to get into conflicts with other characters, whether they're, but have a character that you have to work with, but also it's okay to bicker with them, you know, as long as you don't make a point of needing to win over them. I think that it is something like, you don't have to get along with everybody perfectly well. It's something that can, as long as you know, keep it within limits, can add a lot.
And conflict can be fun.
As long as you know when to stop. All right. Well, thank you, Kristen, for joining us again.
Thank you very much for having me again.
All right. And those of you at home, if anything we said piqued your interest, you can email us at podcast@mythgreens.com. Otherwise, we will talk to you next week. There was a dragon with a pointy tail. He was bigger than a whale, and his breath was terrible. He scared the princess when he came around. Tried to burn the castle down, but she caught him by his tail. Then she tied him to a tree so the dragon couldn't fly. She told him he was mean, and it made the dragon cry. When he finally apologized, she offered him some tea. He accepted it graciously. Now he visits every weekend with the princess who saved herself.
This has been the MythGreant Podcast. Opening closing theme, The Princess Who Saved Herself, by Jonathan Colton.